There we go. There we go.
Better?
I think so. I think we got it.
Rockin'?
Yeah.
Siuk.
Yeah. Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, it's fine. The episode that I edited today was actually the one where we were getting everything going, and then the full intro was just me going, hey.
Hey. Hi. What's up?
Yeah. And then you were like, are you going to finish the intro? Yeah. I was like, well, nope, that's it.
I think sometimes you get a little bit shy when the microphone finally turns on. You're just like, oh, fuck. I forgot how to speak English properly.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, wait. I have to actually like
input
do
yeah.
things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. My voice actually has to be a part of this. Anywho, I'm Clark.
Oh, I'm Karina.
And this is It's Always Spooky.
It's Always Spooky.
So, how was your week?
It was good.
Because I think it's been a week.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I got off meds.
That's right.
So that was a roller coaster. But I'm feeling better now.
And that's good.
It's the last week before I start school, so...
Oh, shit. And remind me, what are you doing again?
Environmental science.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you're doing it online.
Yes.
And remind me, is New Hampshire?
Yeah.
Yeah.
SNHU, because cheap.
Because
cheap.
Even with out-of-state tuition, it's cheaper?
Yeah. They do the same tuition across the board for, like, in-state or out-of-state. And even, like, comparing their tuition with in-state for any of the ones in our state, including Eastern Oregon University, it was significantly cheaper.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right then.
Yeah. And I'm like, as long as they're accredited, that's all that matters to me.
That's all. So. Yeah. Just getting the certificate, right? Nobody wants to actually see the piece of paper. You know, nobody really cares as long as you've got it. All right. Well, that's exciting.
Yeah. Whatever makes my student loans go up the least.
Oh, God. Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah.
I've been pretty lucky lately with student loans. I mean, I made out like a bandit out of hell when I graduated by just getting grants and scholarships for being a poor kid. And then for working for stipends, that really helped. But then I've also kind of fallen into a lot of these like forgiveness program hiatuses. So that's kind of nice too.
Nice.
Like I go on and I look at my bill and it's like, you don't owe us any money. And I'm like, chill.
You're like, sick. Let's just keep doing this.
See you next month then.
Yeah. Right. We can just keep doing this until I die. And we're
that'd be
sick.
Real nice.
Yeah. I'm hoping that like, because I paid way too much for my associates. I'm hoping that I can get through my bachelor's without adding too much to that.
Sure.
And then hopefully get like sponsored through my master's.
Yeah, that's the dream, right?
Yeah.
Get your employer to like pay for your master's degree, because that's where it really costs money and takes a lot of time too. I mean, I don't know. I don't have a master's degree, but I'm assuming it's like a huge step up.
For some reason, I feel like one day we're both going to have master's degrees. I just feel like that's something that's in our future.
When we're like in our late 40s.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I don't know where we're both just going to be like, you know what? Fuck all this. Let's go outside.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Like, do that for a living.
No kidding. So. I mean, I'm definitely not going to be running this business and dog grooming for until I'm 60. I ain't doing it. No way in hell.
Yeah. No,
my
this
body
is,
will give up.
This is great for now.
Yes. It's perfect for the location that we're in too, but not for the long run. And yeah, it would be kind of nice to use my bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm.
Because I spent a lot of money on it.
Yeah. Go study some things out there.
Yeah. Go back. Yeah. Well, I really liked working at Wildlife Safari. I definitely go back there.
Yeah.
I wasn't paid to work there, but.
But if you could.
Oh, if they paid me
to
literally, you know, scoop poop, I'd do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd pick up cheetah shit.
Mm-hmm. Easy. Oh, money.
Well, anyway, so this week we are, well, actually, I guess we should start with saying this is the debut episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
this
yeah.
This is the one.
This would be the first time you would be hearing our voice because we decided this would be the perfect episode to do so. So, you know, welcome officially to the podcast.
Yeah. So this is going to be released on Halloween, and so we thought that it was only right that we cover 1978's Halloween.
The OG.
Yeah.
Come on.
Halloween for Halloween.
Plus, I haven't seen it before, so it was one of those movies that, like, obviously you know every little bit about it, and, you know, I found myself with this really funny little Randy character in my brain or on my shoulder as I was watching it, just being like, oh, you've broken the rule. You're going to die. Oh, yeah, no.
I don't even know how long it's been since I've watched this. A really long time.
Because it's like one of Mom's favorites, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it might actually be like her favorite horror movie.
I'm pretty sure I've heard you say that before, so.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
Yeah. And
she'll correct us.
Oh, I'm sure she will. She'll be like, hey, I listened to your first episode and you're wrong.
Mom doesn't sound anything like
she
that.
She doesn't. She's so pleasant. Yeah, it's going to be cool to finally get something out there because we've been doing this for,
like
a few months.
Oh, Jesus.
More than a few months.
It's been through the summer. Has it been through the summer?
Yeah.
Fuck me.
Yeah.
It's been since like April or May.
Yeah, somewhere Jesus around there. Christ. And we started off with only recording every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And you guys may or may not ever hear those because they're terrible quality.
Hey, then we'll just put them behind a paywall.
Yeah.
There's plenty of people who do that. They just call, we just put them in the safe, put them in the vault.
Yeah, we'll make a Patreon and y'all can pay for terrible shit.
cringy shit, but it would still be fun.
And also, we're going to redo them anyway, so.
We'll have plenty of time.
Yeah. Yeah, especially since in that little group is The Shining. Got to pull that out of there and do something with it.
You liked that episode?
I liked that episode. Well, yeah.
We could always re-record it if you didn't like the quality of it.
Well, I didn't like the quality of it for sure. But like, that's a movie that we have to do. Well, that and The Ring. We have to do those justice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll redo those.
Yeah, we'll redo them. Shall we dive in?
Let's do it.
To 1970s Halloween.
Yeah.
Well, just a quick couple of metadata points. Obviously, this is directed by John Carpenter. Back in 1978, John Carpenter was still fairly new in the business. And I think this is one of his first big horror productions.
Yeah.
And he didn't really have a great budget for it. So he did the music. He was the director. He was one of the producers. The other producer was Deborah Hill. Who there's some fun trivia about her later. As we've tended to do in the last couple of episodes, I'm going to include the title card. This one was a little bit blasé. Of course, it's 1978, so I'm going to give them some credit there. But it's just simply the logo with the iconic Halloween theme. And then you just see like a jack-o'-lantern that's just sitting there vibing. And it just kind of slowly pans in on the jack-o'-lantern, which I thought was kind of fun. You get kind of this interesting like internal aspect of the pumpkin as it's like zooming in. It's kind of indicative of like the movie and basically breaking into people's houses is the way that I kind of into it's like an intrusion was that that's kind of the vibe I got from it.
Yeah.
And then the tagline, I got this from IMDb, is the trick was to stay alive.
Ah, good stuff. I did hear that the pumpkin, there were a few elements that maybe people just read a lot into.
Sure.
But they were saying that the nose of the pumpkin, there is a line that like comes down from it on the right hand side. Mm-hmm. And they were saying that that's supposed to be like the handle of a knife. And then the pumpkin's nose is supposed to be a knife.
Interesting.
And so that's supposed to be kind of.
You're talking about the jack-o'-lantern that's in the title card and not the jack-o'-lantern that's like on the poster. Like on the movie poster.
I think it's supposed to be the one that's on the title card.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
But yeah, I'll check to make sure. But yeah, there were a couple little things where they were breaking down both of them. Okay, so it is the title card one that they were talking about. So the nose is supposed to be like a knife, and then the left eye is supposed to somehow represent Michael, I believe, and then the right eye is supposed to represent the victims. I don't remember how all it's supposed to, but it's supposed to be something about like the way that they're shaped and the way that things are shaded is supposed to be reminiscent of like.
Interesting. Oh my God. I want to rewatch it now. You should like put that in the notes or something if you figure out what like video that was.
Yeah. I think it might've been from Heavy Spoilers. I think they're the ones who went over it.
I did actually. I was going to credit them because I also watched a very similar video. I wonder if we might have watched the same.
We probably
breakdown.
Did.
I almost always do that. I'll watch the film either once or twice, and then I'll watch breakdowns or ending explains of it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I actually went like much further into this than I have over some of the other ones, and I want to try to keep with this for everything that we cover.
Yeah.
But I actually like felt like I had time over this week to sit down and watch it and go to into some deep dives, look up some extra trivia.
You came prepared.
I did.
Huh, yeah, all right.
I made notes.
All right.
I do have a brief synopsis to go over that is spoiler free.
Okay.
Yeah, spoiler free, because if you watch the first 2 minutes of this movie, then you know that this happens. My little synopsis is, on the night of Halloween 1963, then 6-year-old Michael Myers grabs a knife, dons a clown mask, and brutally murders his sister. 15 years later, he has escaped from Smith's Grove Sanitarium and is out for blood. Blood.
Blood. That's definitely how I would probably describe it too. I would probably describe this as like after a tragic event in the early 60s, you know, a group of teenagers are terrorized by a mysterious figure from one of their pasts.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any other kind of metadata we could... Well, I guess I could do the budget real quick.
Whenever we go over budget for things, I always have to put my mind into, like, movie budgets always seem high.
Yeah.
But if I were to compare a budget from 1978 to a budget for, like, a single episode of something now...
It's, absolutely.
It is significantly less.
Well, and I'm even thinking about, like, production, special effects... paying all of the cast members,
mm-hmm.
like filming, because filming takes time and editing, like all that stuff takes time. Like,
yeah,
there's just so many things that go into making a movie. And now like making a television show takes almost the same amount of work in mm-hmm. a lot of cases, if not more.
Yeah, because every episode of a television show now is a movie length.
Absolutely. Well, and they're telling stories that are way longer. You've got these like binge-worthy shows on Netflix that are like 10, 12 hours long, but people are just sitting in their houses and they're just like watching it. I'm just going to watch all of Bridgerton today. To get back on topic. The budget for this movie was a whopping $325,000. That's just an estimation, but that's like houses are more expensive than that now.
Oh yeah.
Although, I don't know what kind of monies that is in 1978. Times, but it looks like it grossed about 47 million worldwide.
And I did read that the 47 million that it grossed worldwide, if you were to translate that to, I believe what I was reading was from 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to translate that to 2008 money, it would be 150 million
on a $325,000 budget.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's nuts.
That is insane.
Especially considering this was independent. John Carpenter didn't actually have a production company that was backing him for this.
Interesting. Yeah, you're right. It lists production companies on here, but I'm kind of curious if that's after the fact. Like it,
ooh, yeah.
It labels them on IMDb as under filming locations. They have production companies, Compass International, Falcon International, Pictures and Productions.
Interesting.
But I don't know any of those companies, so I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? I feel like we get conflicting information.
Well, I don't like to just take IMDb's information as gospel. Plus, like, you and I are just doing this for fun. We're not experts at this shit. If we get something wrong, God, sue me.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, if we get something wrong, please, our one listener.
Come after me.
Yeah, Brian, don't get mad.
I'm gonna mess shit up sometimes. I'm dumb. Got a lot to do.
Nope, we're just here to have a good time, okay?
So what would you say was your scariest scene? Because I had a hard time with this.
I did too. Okay, so one of the notes that I wrote as I was just watching the movie, one of the things was there are very loud jump scares in this movie.
Yeah.
They rely on like the sound design to really drive it home.
Yep.
So I was thinking about, okay, so if I were to choose one of these jump scares, which one is the best for me? I couldn't really come up with anything. And so I ended up saying that the scariest scene was actually the scene right before my favorite one,
mm-hmm.
which is when Lori gets into the closet. And he's like trying to come at her while she's in the closet.
Yep.
To me, that's the scariest because that's like the most tense, but it's also not a jump scare. It's just that he's just going for her.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's nowhere to go.
Yeah. And so I chose that one, even though it's probably not the most frightening. I think it's just the most tense.
Absolutely. No, I agree with you on that. Yeah. It was really difficult for me to choose a scariest scene. I think it's just because we've been so desensitized. I haven't seen all of the other Halloween movies, and this was the first time I had seen this one, and it was just so like campy that it was really hard to take serious sometimes.
Yeah.
Which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a classic, which it's on purpose. I tried to think to myself of like going to the movie theater for the first time back in the 70s, had never seen a movie like this before. And one thing that I really appreciated about this movie was Michael Myers as a character with this mask on. They, you know, they left his death at the end ambiguous so that it would give people that like sense of he might still be out there. Mm-hmm. I might get got by Michael Myers on my way home because like he just kills people indiscriminately.
Yeah,
there's no rhyme or reason to it.
And I think I actually read a comment by a Reddit user Camantha_Allardings stated, quote, one of the reasons this film hit so big is that it was one of the first films to transfer horror into the mundanity of suburbia. Mm. It tapped into the fears of and about teenagers being free enough to go off and do things on their own while still young enough to be vulnerable. And that was that thing where it's like, I could still get got by him and I'm no longer safe in the burbs in my house.
Right. Thinking that by being closer to civilization, you would have some sort of like insulation from danger.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of having that come to Jesus moment of like, you might not be. You very well might not.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, evil's everywhere.
Yeah. It could literally be everywhere or yeah. anywhere. My scariest scene, honestly, just in hindsight, thinking about it, would probably be kind of that nightmare stroll that Lori take, not stroll, but this like kind of, what did I call it? Yeah, I just called it Lori's nightmare through Annie's house when they go over to, I think it was house, and she, because she's sent the kids somewhere else, right? And she goes in there and she just finds like dead body after dead body after dead body. You know, I think that to me, if I were watching it in the theater, that would be the point where I would just like lose it.
I'm going to amend my scariest scene because it just reminded me of one.
Yeah.
Hearing you say that. When she is walking through the house doing mm-hmm. that nightmare stroll, and then for the life of me, I can't remember his name right now, but the boyfriend, he like falls down.
Yeah, that's
in front of mm-hmm. her from the ceiling. Mm-hmm. That was
a good one.
That was a good one.
That when she opens the cabinet and that girl's just like turning upside down.
Yeah, she's just like, this isn't very comfortable.
So most of the deaths in this movie were so funny. Like I had heard, I think it was on that Heavy Spoiler show, that a lot of the deaths were almost made to sound kind of like sexual in nature on purpose.
Yeah.
And that there was like a lack of blood on purpose too, just to, I don't really remember why the lack of blood wasn't there, but I just found it very funny. Just the, like every single death scene was just like rolling around and slightly moaning. And then you just see one little like slash or like a stab motion. My favorite was that dude that just got stuck to the wall.
Oh my God.
By his abdomen.
Yeah. I think it was Heavy Spoilers was saying that there's just like a huge Freudian element to this movie, and that even so far as like Michael, when he is killing his sister, like he is just prior to that introduced to sex at like a very young age because right. he's seen her and her boyfriend and they're canoodling, and then the choice of a knife to kill everybody is because it's phallic in nature.
Exactly. And
yeah. It like breaks it all down to essentially be like, it's all related to fucking.
Right. And that he's like mimicking his surroundings. Right. Mm-hmm. Because I think he even in that show had talked about how Michael was mimicking his sister Judith's boyfriend who put on the mask.
Yeah.
Right. And then saw them having sex. And then after the boyfriend had left, been like, okay, it's my turn now. Not to have sex because he's six. He doesn't understand that. But yeah. That using the blade was his version of that. So very, very interesting.
Which that scene, I thought, okay. So
the opening scene?
Yeah, the opening cold scene, which is all one take.
It's fucking fantastic.
It was.
It's a great opening
beautifully
scene.
Beautifully done.
Did you notice, I'm sorry to cut you off, but did you notice the, I noticed this and it was probably because I know the premise to this movie, but the height of the camera.
Yeah.
When he's walking through the house, I was like, I like this angle, right? Because it kind mm-hmm. of, I think if you were watching this for the first time and you didn't know this was a six-year-old kid, I don't think you'd notice.
No.
And I think after the fact, you'd be like, oh my God, a child? Whoa.
Yeah.
And then a kid?
Yeah. And then you watch it again and you're like, oh, they gave it away from the beginning. They spoiled it a little bit, but I liked that Easter egg.
But if you wouldn't have known, then you would have just been like, all right, whatever.
I really don't think you would have known. Like, if I would have just gone into that movie theater, I don't think I would have noticed that detail unless I were just, like, really pinpointed on it. And I would have been totally shocked to know it was a six-year-old kid.
Yeah. That scene specifically, when I was watching it again, I was like, so you see the act of him stabbing her.
Yeah.
You don't see where the knife goes.
Yes.
But then afterward, you see blood splattered where it, you should have seen it.
Yes.
If, like, it's essentially what I'm trying to say is, like, the perspective is, like, where actually is she getting stabbed? Because when you see the blood afterward.
Which was your favorite scene?
Oh, okay. So, going back to this. So my thing was where the blood is, you should have seen him blood. Stabbing her.
Yes.
Like in that spot. It just didn't line up right. which it was hilarious. but okay, so favorite scene. okay, so it's it makes me laugh. It's so funny. Okay, so after she stabs Michael and gets out of the closet and she's like hanging out in the hallway, right? There's this scene where the camera's looking at her and then you can see in the room behind her that Michael's like laying on the ground, incapacitated. Right. And then he just like slowly wakes up and sits up and then looks over at her. And I was cackling at that moment because it was just like a... Are you fucking for real?
Yeah. Like, you couldn't have finished me off. I loved that too, honestly, just in hindsight, because the fact that you would be like on the phone, or maybe she wasn't even on the phone, she's just sitting there consoling herself. Why would you turn your back to the person that was just like assaulting you, right? Like trying to kill you in your closet. Like, first of all, double tap.
Oh.
Rule number whatever. Double tap.
Yeah.
Always.
Always.
Come on. We're not children.
Yeah.
We've seen Zombieland.
Yeah. If I'm going to kill somebody, I'm going to make for damn sure they're dead.
I'm going to make sure they look like pulp.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Right, yeah. No, we're not getting up again.
No, this is one doodle that can't be undead.
Mm-hmm. But and so it is quite comical to just be like, what the fuck are you doing, bitch?
Nick was asleep at that point.
Oh.
And I was cackling. And then he like woke up and was like, what?
and it's like during the tensest, scariest parts of the movie. And you're just like laughing hysterically.
Yeah. One day he's going to be like, you're more mentally unwell than I thought you were. Cheers to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was when Annie was on the phone with Lori, mm-hmm. and she was making popcorn. And it was just this really cute, easy transition. She's making popcorn. She's talking on the phone and she like pans over and there's a door in the background that just has like a window.
Yeah.
And she pans out and Michael's just standing there. And then when she pans back, like just the matter of her walking across the threshold there, he's gone.
Yeah.
He just like disappears. He's like there 1 second and then he's gone in like the next moment. Like it's not that he stood there for any amount of time. He was there for like less than a couple of frames just to give you that sense of like, oh fuck you. Yeah. Oh shit, he's right there. Yeah. Yeah. So I appreciated that. I thought that was really great editing. I thought that was just I thought that this movie had a lot of really great building tension.
Yeah.
Just kind of making you feel just uneasy. Like, what the fuck is this guy going to do? Like, he's just stalking these girls, like, while they're walking to and from. And
yeah. And I feel like when you see him in this movie, you assume, I guess just by, like, his build and the way that he carries himself and the way that they're like, oh, it's been 15 years that he's been locked in this place, all that kind of stuff. You almost forget that when he was locked up, he was 6. And then you think that he's like much older than he is because at that point he should be 21.
Yeah, 15 years later, right? But yeah. He looked like just his build and the fact that he's wearing a mask, he looks 40.
Yeah. Yeah. You think it's this like old creeper guy who's just like stalking these people. And
right.
I had to tell myself a couple times, oh, yeah, he's only 21.
He's only 21. Yep.
Like he's maybe 3 years older than these
people. He's 21 and he spent his entire life, his entire upbringing in a mental institution.
Yeah.
That's not like he's not getting a public education.
No.
At best, he's getting therapy. But as Dr. Loomis said in the movie, he hadn't said anything.
No.
it didn't even like, I don't think he made eye contact with anybody. No. I think Dr. Loomis had this really great line, because I love like good quotes in movies. And I will paraphrase it here because I don't want to look it up. But he just said, like, I watched that kid for 15 years, not look at the wall, look past the wall to this night when he was going to come back and like fuck shit up. Right.
Yeah.
And I loved like just how poignant that moment was, because you kind of wonder to yourself, or at least I did for a majority of this movie. You're like, how does Dr. Loomis know anything about this guy?
Yeah.
Right. Because he hasn't said anything, you know, in this entire time, like just to have this firm belief that he is evil. Like he there's no rhyme or reason to it. I don't even think I've even looked him in the eyes, but if I have, I don't see anything that resembles a human soul in there.
Yeah. Yeah. He essentially says that like all that's in those eyes is evil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Honorable mention as far as favorite scenes go, or at least comical scenes go, to the night that Michael escapes.
Mm-hmm.
The way that that whole car scene plays out is hilarious. She's like, oh my God, there's somebody on the roof. Let me roll down my window.
That literally, to me too, I was like, are you fuck? You literally just watched somebody climb under your car and you're at a state hospital.
Yeah.
You literally drove up and there were patients on the lawn. That was another really good moment for me too, is when she said something like, since when did they just let the patients just roam around the yard in the middle of the night, right? And like, you almost have to just look at her in the same moment that Dr. Loomis would be looking at her and just be like, they don't do that, bitch. That's obviously an indication of a bigger issue.
This is life enrichment time in the middle of the night.
Just in the middle of fucking, just on a random Tuesday. We're doing a little midnight power hour out in the field. We're all going to do yoga and dance under the full moon.
Yeah, we're going to do the Pilates out in the yard and just...
Good fucking God. I mean, so stupid. You fucking work in a state hospital somewhere. Like, I think they were supposed to be, the nurse was supposed to be like a nurse, like a worker underneath Dr. Loomis, or I'd even heard like potentially a love interest of Dr. Loomis. It's like, you know what the fuck he does, bitch.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. And granted, also, it wasn't in a time where psychiatric patients were exactly treated like humans.
Oh, God. Yeah.
A lot of the time, they still aren't. But
back then, like, there were way less regulations and there weren't like cameras.
Yeah.
There wasn't like surveillance or OSHA, maybe not OSHA, but you know, like the human resources version of OSHA.
Yeah. This is like barely past lobotomy times.
Right.
And you still would assume somebody who has medical training, like a nurse, would still recognize like, oh, this isn't normal.
This is the very least, like a high risk situation, and risk being like a risk to your fucking safety.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You see fucking Linda out there spinning circles at midnight and you're like, yeah, that's normal.
Oh, is it?
Oh,
you're right.
It's midnight butthole sunning time. They're all going to be out there. So I guess getting into ratings.
Yeah. I think ratings would be good because we could either do ratings or we could do trivia.
Ooh, let's do trivia because I feel like between the two of us, we have a lot.
Yeah, I did put Jamie Lee Curtis is so hot.
Honestly?
Queen.
Yeah.
Takes after home mama.
So, Michael Myers' middle name. I don't remember when they say it throughout the movie. It's close. That is honestly not far. Audrey. I might want to murder my sister, too, if my parents made my middle name Audrey.
So was that a common boy's name in the 60s?
No idea.
Interessante.
Yeah. Michael Audrey Myers. Audrey Myers. Also, I feel like that would disarm him. Like, if he was walking down the road, all creepy-like as he does, and you're like, Michael Audrey Myers, like, he would just have to be like, okay. And just go back to that creepy ass house, go to his room and go to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get back in your house immediately.
Yeah. I didn't see any time throughout this movie where they just like said his full name.
No. That could have really done it. I mean, you know, if you had the brain of a 6-year-old, that might have been the move.
Yeah. That or like a really harsh timeout.
Go to your room! A really harsh timeout with a forget me stick.
Yeah.
In the form of a sledgehammer.
Yep.
Straight to the dome.
Yep. We love dome hammers.
I did like We were talking earlier about how Michael Myers kind of personified evil. One of the trivia points that I had seen was that, was it John Carpenter? I might have to look it up. This was based off an experience that he had had where he had met, when he was studying for his undergrad, he had met a young boy in a psychiatric hospital who just stared daggers at him the entire time they were there. And he claimed that he saw nothing but evil in him. And I found that very interesting. And so that's kind of like what he based the Michael Myers character off of.
Yeah.
And then more so to that point, that John Carpenter had kind of always dreamed, this is like a trivia point that I found, and always kind of dreamed of making like a haunted house film. And so he didn't go that route with this one, but he almost had this homage or this idea in his mind that the evil from Michael came from the house. Like, yeah, if maybe he was born into evil that came from the house, and he was thinking about like exploring that in sequels and things like that, which I found to be really interesting. It would make a lot of sense.
It does. And I feel like I remember reading something, it might have been on Reddit, but I feel like I remember reading something that was kind of to that effect also, where mm-hmm. it was like they make the house look a certain way, and even though it's being sold right now, and like one of the very beginning scenes, Jamie Lee Curtis is like dropping keys off at this house because her father's the real estate agent that's selling it.
Right.
And they haven't fixed like anything. Mm-hmm. And so they're still trying to make it really look as if like the house is the problem.
Right.
It totally makes sense that those two things are, they're intertwined, where he is trying to portray this evil child that he saw while also making it seem as if like this evil is driven by whatever it is that exists in this space.
Yeah. I wonder if it would be kind of like a Hell House situation.
Yeah.
Where it's like maybe the space between our plane and another plane was thin in that house or yeah. on the grounds of that property. Anyways, just kind of fun stuff to fun, like yeah. theories to explore. And
especially since with this sequel, they do a very like cop out move.
Right.
It's cool to explore kind of the different things that could be at play here, because the sequel went one very odd way.
That's a really good point, right? Because like I know for this movie there are a shit ton of sequels. I think there's maybe a dozen of them, and then there's spinoffs.
Yeah, there's a lot
where there's like there's so many directors and other people who've taken over at this point that it's kind of interesting to go back to the OG and see what it could have been before it became a huge success. Right? It probably wasn't intending to make a bunch of sequels that didn't really tie back to each other, kind of like Saw.
Yeah.
I wanted to also bring this up, that I was reading, I think it was in that Heavy Spoiler show, that the sequels ended up putting more of a highlight on Lori being the younger sister and having her be more of a target
yeah.
for the overall movie, right? But that the original movie, and I can kind of lend credit to this, that she didn't necessarily seem like the main target.
No.
You know, and that she wasn't even necessarily intended to be like the Virgin Mary like character.
Yeah.
She was just the one that was the most like sexually frustrated.
Yeah.
And wasn't necessarily like getting those needs met. And that the main target might have been Annie.
Yeah.
It's like Annie's kind of stalked more than any of the other people, any of the other like girls in the movie.
And after her death, she's the one that's placed under Judith's gravestone.
Yes, right.
Yeah. And I read something similar where it was saying that Lori very much so may have just been like wrong place, wrong time.
Collateral damage, right?
Because of walking up to the house to drop the keys off when he was already there. And so he just like had eyes on her.
Sure.
And that was it.
Well, and yeah, he didn't even really like, right? Like, that was what I really liked about the beginning of this movie, is all the tension. You're like, why the fuck is this guy just following these people, right? Yeah. Is he just crazy for the sake of being crazy, or is there a motive behind it, right? And I think that is, I wonder if there was like a catalyst. Was there a straw that broke the camel's back, or he in his brain was like, no, that person's got to die? Or was he just, he was stalking these people just looking for the right opportunity? Was it like Pennywise where he was like, I like it when they're scared of me, so I'm going to keep instilling fear. Is that your Pennywise impression? Right.
Yeah, well, it's a...
Georgie.
I was just thinking, I just watched the second It movie again, and he sounds, at least the Bill Skarsgård sounds so much like Winnie the Pooh when he's doing his like happy-go-lucky clown.
I cannot wait to cover that. Also, oh. I need like 2 months advance because I'm going to read the book before we do it.
Fuck yeah.
And that's a fucking book.
It's a fucking book. It's my favorite book. And if you ever want it, I own a copy of it.
I don't need 2 months. As long as I have a few weeks in advance, I know that it's going to be good enough that I'm going to want to sit and just get through
it. Right. Yeah. And I'd say like it's Stephen King. So there is, we're getting off topic a little bit, but that's fine. Like it is Stephen King. So it is dense. Like I definitely found myself kind of like lolling through some parts, just being like, okay, man, I get it.
Yeah.
We're on a existential extraterrestrial journey together.
Yeah. But like, there's some turtles. So, yeah.
There's a lot of cocaine that went into this book. Okay.
Yeah, you were really riding the high from Carrie getting
right
into
this. the cocaine train, as it were.
Yeah.
I was going to see if there's any other trivia that I needed to bring up. Oh, I did want to bring up the Michael Myers mask. Did you learn about this trivia?
Oh, yeah. So I did, because I had known like forever ago where the mask came from.
Oh, yeah.
And then Nick had asked about it and I was like, fuck, I don't remember. But yeah, there.
Okay.
I know about it.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So initially, when they were trying to figure out what mask to use, they had found like a creepy, demented, like smiling clown mask, but they thought it was like it was too creepy, like it didn't quite fit. Yeah. Like, So instead, what they ended up doing was they bought like a $2 Captain Kirk mask, and what they did to it was they ripped off the eyebrows and the sideburns, they painted it bluish white. The hair was spray painted down and the eyes were opened more to give him like a very flat, expressionless face.
They're
trying
to make him like look less human.
Yeah, they're just trying to make him look like emotionless. Yeah. Like, and like almost featureless too.
Yeah.
Where he just kind of looked scary, just haunting, and just like you wanted to stay the fuck away from him.
I did read that William Shatner later tried to sue.
Oh, really?
Because they were using his likeness as Captain Kirk, as the person in the mask, or as the mask for Michael Myers.
I get you.
And then he apparently like got some sort of funds from it, and he ended up donating the funds. But then they said nowadays, any lawyer worth his shit would have looked at that and been like, first off, you actually don't own the rights to Captain Kirk.
Fuck
so
no.
You wouldn't have.
Absolutely.
That case would have been thrown out.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, no shit. As well as like they didn't use your likeness. They took, because they completely altered it.
Yeah.
They ripped off half of it. They painted it. They spray painted a bunch of it. Like you can't.
No.
That's not the same thing. But no. I don't know. What do I know? I'm not a lawyer.
It's also like that. Tell us that your career is going down the tubes without telling us your career is going down the tubes.
No shit. When you've got to like basically panhandle the courts for money because you can't, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of which, I think one of the characters, the character played Dr. Loomis, he took this job simply because he needed to pay alimony. He wasn't super interested in it. And even like his daughter, who was in the rock and roll scene at the time, had told him that she really liked one of John Carpenter's music videos that he had done. And so he was like, okay, I got alimony to pay. Fuck it. I'll give it a shot. And John Carpenter was super intimidated because he was a really big fan of his. I'll see if I can find it. I was correct earlier that the story based on the experience by John Carpenter, he was touring a psychiatric hospital and met a child who stared at him with a look of evil and it terrified me. Oh, Donald Pleasance. Donald Pleasance is the one who played Dr. Loomis.
Yeah.
Which also coincidentally, John Carpenter approached Peter Cushing and Sir Christopher Lee to play the role of Dr. Sam Loomis. Both of them didn't take the role because it didn't offer enough money. But Christopher Lee stated multiple times in his career that Sir Christopher Lee, I correct myself, that he regretted that decision. Like horribly, horribly regretted that decision.
Speaking of money, we're going to step into a misogyny territory really quick.
Ooh,
because the budget, as we had stated before, was $325,000. Donald Pleasance, who played Dr. Sam Loomis, was paid the most. He made $20,000 off of this movie.
Wow.
Meanwhile, Jamie Lee Curtis made $8,000. So she made less than half of what he made while she was on screen more.
Way more.
And Tony Moran, who played Michael as an adult, was paid $25 a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy too? is I was reading a trivia point that Deborah Hill, who was one of the producers, also stood in for Michael several times.
She did in the opening scene with the through his vision stabbing his sister. That's her hand.
I heard that she was also Michael in a couple of the scenes when it was like a downward shot and he was just like standing in the field, like in a backyard or something. Like that was also Deborah.
Which I'm pretty sure she was John Carpenter's partner at that time.
I was wondering. I was curious if that they had some kind of relation.
Yeah.
But I wasn't gonna.
I think they did. I'm pretty sure that they were in a relationship at that point.
Okay.
But I don't remember what exact scenes it's referring to, but a lot of the reason why they ended up using Deborah in certain scenes also was because child Michael could only work X amount of time because he was a child actor.
Yep.
And so they were like, well, if we have to redo this shot, we have to save time because we can't keep working him. So Deborah,
child labor laws,
get in there.
Get in,
this is your moment.
That's actually pretty funny. I did not know that.
A lot of these next ones are going to come from heavy spoilers. So shouts out to them. This is kind of tying back into like Michael being evil, the house also being potentially a bastion of evil. They were saying that Michael Myers was supposed to be the embodiment of a curse put on the town.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like the personification of a curse. Also that this was one of the very first movies to put us in the eyes of a killer with that opening scene.
Ooh, I like that as a trivia point. Ooh, that's super cool.
Yeah. Did you catch, the reference to the Thing from Another World?
I didn't know anything about Thing from Another World, so I didn't catch any references to it. I think I saw something in one of the breakdowns. So
yeah, so I knew, like, when we were watching it, I saw that they were watching The Thing from Another World on TV, mm-hmm, in the movie, and I was like, wait, didn't John Carpenter direct that? And I was confused because I'm like, but I also feel like that came out later than this. And so I looked into it a little bit. And Thing from Another World, John Carpenter didn't direct, but he directed The Thing. And
yeah.
So it was kind of like a little Easter egg thing that what they show mostly is the title card for The Thing from Another World, which actually just says The Thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, then he goes on to direct The Thing. And I'm like, oh, that's a cute little.
Yeah, you're right. That is a nod. I think. Oh, I remember them talking about that in that video, and I cannot remember the correlation. If he, like, he was really inspired by A Thing from Another World, and so that they, like, reached out to him, or maybe one of the producers from Hollywood reached out and were like, hey, we want you to make a movie about The Thing.
Yeah. Yeah, because I actually need to go through all of John Carpenter's filmography, too, because I know he's made a lot of things that, like, I don't tie to his name. But for some reason, The Thing was that one that I'm like, wait.
Right.
I think that was
him. Hey, that's a John Carpenter, like, special. Ooh, this is cool. The writer's goal was to write the film like a radio play with scares every 10 minutes.
Ooh, okay.
Which kind of makes sense, too, because I don't know if you probably know this, the Halloween theme was done in a 5/4 signature line, which he actually learned from his dad, who was, I think he was a composer.
Yeah.
It instills a sense of dread because it's played just faster than the standard 4/4 signature, time signature.
Yeah.
And coincidentally, I don't remember who it was that watched this movie beforehand. Like, it was somebody that was watching it in a test screening, and it was before Carpenter had finished the score. And so when he watched it without the score, he didn't find it scary at all.
Yeah.
And then afterwards had seen it in the theater and had completely changed their perspective.
I texted Nick because I had heard something about the 5/4 time signature, mm-hmm, and my partner is a music nerd. And I texted him and I was like, hey, I just found out like they recorded this in a 5/4 signature because they said that it was going to be the most unsettling.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, yeah, it is.
Like, by definition. All right.
Yeah.
Crazy?
Yeah. He's like, well, yeah, it is. And I'm like thinking to myself, That kind of explains why also that is the song that is used through like the whole movie.
Yeah.
It does like a Titanic where it's like My Heart Will Go On plays in a different font all throughout the entire movie.
Yes.
Until you get the full thing at the end.
Yeah.
But they front loaded it this time. Where it's just like,
you start with that.
Yeah. And then all throughout the movie, you just get kind of like, da, 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 da.
Yeah, you like, get like kind of, it just kind of comes and goes. Like yeah. They kind of, they insert it, and they don't even necessarily insert it in like a death scene.
No.
They kind of insert it beforehand and kind of these building tension, making you feel like, what the fuck is going on right now?
Yeah.
What is wrong with this dude right now?
I also read that when they were setting up all of the lighting for this film also, because we're really lucky that nowadays we get to watch it with remasters and like things being brightened and darkened and like things looking a lot better than they did back then. But with how low budget it was, they didn't have a lot of money for really technical lighting.
Yes.
And
yes.
So there were really stark contrasts between the daylight scenes and the nighttime scenes. And that was supposed to lend itself along with that music to making those nighttime scenes be even more frightening because you couldn't see anything coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I had heard that watching this as like an original on VHS, it's very difficult to view some of the scenes, which is kind of funny. It reminded me of that like Game of Thrones episode, which literally came out like what, 6-7 years ago now, the Battle of Winterfell, when you can't see shit in that episode. Like, you can't see anything that's going on. And it's like, come on, we're better than this.
Yeah, we gone done did this.
Turn the brightness up. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, this is, come on.
What is going on right now?
Come on. Yeah, meanwhile, nowadays, we could film something in the dark and then in post be like, oh yeah, that looks fine. We got this.
Yeah. So John Carpenter and Deborah Hill, I don't know why I keep wanting to pronounce her name different, Deborah Hill, have stated many times over the years that they did not consciously set out to depict virginity as a way of defeating a rampaging killer. The reason why the horny teens all die is simply that they are so preoccupied with getting laid that they don't notice that there is a killer at large. On the other hand, Laurie Strode spends a lot of time on her own and is therefore more alert.
Honestly, to be fair, that kind of checks out through history. Like, if you think about some of the most iconic serial killers throughout time, a lot of their killings have been related to like sexual experiences and that sort of stuff. I'm thinking like specifically Dahmer. A lot of his stuff was just related to like meeting guys and getting in hookups and that sort of thing. So like if you were minding your own business and not worrying about hooking up, probably didn't have to worry.
Absolutely. You know, I just honestly thought about the Zodiac killer too, right? Because a lot of times he would just go find people that were like making out in their cars, and it's literally just a matter of like they're not paying attention.
Yeah,
you can get the jump on them, and really all you need is to get the jump on somebody in order to hurt them.
Did you ever tune into the conspiracy theory that was happening about the Zodiac killer being Ted Cruz?
No.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's
wouldn't dumb. The Zodiac killer be dead now?
You would think, but some dumb shits were like, no, the Zodiac killer's actually Ted Cruz. And I'm like,
you're like, wow, fam.
He doesn't look old enough to me, but
I would think he would be too young. Like, I mean, when was the Zodiac killer? When was the Zodiac killer like even around? I feel like that was like the 60s. Yeah,
like, and what's the best way to Google that? When was the Zodiac killer killing?
This is when these are the types of like Google searches that you make when like you start getting added to those lists.
Yeah, where all of a sudden your camera pops on because your FBI agent is watching you.
Like, no, I swear to God, I'm not looking up how to make chloroform. Like, go away. Oh, it says date apprehended, unapprehended.
Oh, well,
in the late 1960s.
Yeah, so Ted Cruz would have been, like, just born.
Yeah. 5 confirmed dead.
70. Yeah, so he would have not even, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he's not. No, because the Zodiac Killer must have been at least in his late teens, early 20s, and he was probably older than that. But I'm, like, just giving credit where credit's due. You can technically start murdering people fairly young.
Yeah.
Oh, it's because they look alike? Come on. to the fucking police sketch?
And, like, you know, to be fair... I've never seen Ted Cruz and the Zodiac Killer in the same room.
Ergo.
The last little bit of trivia that I have is that if in the beginning when dumb shit decides to roll down her window when there's a serial killer on top of her car or a killer on top of her car and then she like rolls it back up, I believe. If you pause and zoom in, you can see that there is a wrench that's attached to Michael's hand that's been painted pink.
Yeah.
To help him break the window.
Mm-hmm. But it's like super clearly shown in the shot.
It is. It's like very obvious that there is a wrench.
You know what? It was hard to break glass back then, okay? They didn't have sugar glass.
And you know, the effects of that time weren't great. Like, well, okay, so you have to compare a few things. Like, Star Wars was made and Star Wars looked incredible, but also it had an insane amount of money that was put behind it.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good effects came at a high price back then.
Absolutely. So much money went into those. I mean, yeah. To the point that like Lucasfilms was made like, I mean, I don't know, but there was an entire production company that was made for those movies.
Yeah.
Hey, John Carpenter makes a cameo. The voice of Annie's boyfriend, Paul, whom we hear on the phone talking to Lindsay and a minute later to Annie.
Oh, Paul.
That's actually pretty cool. I did not know that.
I had no idea.
Dude, that's cool as fuck. Okay. That's all the trivia that I've got, unless there's any more that you have.
Just for the poster.
Oh, yeah.
So if you zoom in on the poster, if you zoom in on the hand, it's pretty apparent that there is eyes, a nose, and a mouth. And so the hand is actually supposed to look like a human face.
Yeah.
And then if you pan your eyes down just a little bit, apparently, I don't see it, but apparently in the knife is supposed to be the reflection of a screaming woman.
I've seen that, yeah.
I don't see it, but I guess that's what it's supposed to be.
Maybe they just super blurred it out or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't see somebody screaming either.
Are we both dumb?
We were both dumb. I see the face in the hand, though. That's fucking weird.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's gnarly. Wait, and this isn't the one with the right eye and the left eye, right? That's in the jack-o'-lantern in
yeah.
the beginning. Gross.
Big gross. Well, let's get into ratings. You can go first.
Ooh. Well, I will... I felt kind of bad because my ratings are going to be pretty low, but... Ooh! I didn't pick my weapon!
I didn't either because there's really only one. Wait. There's two.
Yeah. I think there's just two.
Let me think. Three. There's three.
There's the blade, the knife.
The knife.
There's the coat hanger.
The coat hanger.
And then there's the...
knitting needle.
The knitting needle. I want the knitting needle.
You can have it.
Okay, so so great. This is being like, all right, label out all of the murder weapons. Yeah. Well, I don't really think that the coat hanger and the knitting needle kill anybody per se, but they are a weapon.
They should have.
And we need to have more than one weapon because otherwise that's boring. Come on.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna for scariness. I went with a 2.5 knitting needles out of 5.
Yeah. All right, Grandma.
I did not really find it that scary. If anything, I found it incredibly hilarious.
It was like, so funny.
It was so great. It was a good classic, though. Quality, though, I would, I gave it a little bit more than that because it did have some really great editing moments and some good, jump scares with Michael. Like that moment that you had told me that Nick had told you about where I think it's Annie and Laurie are walking past a car. Michael just kind of like jumps out, just like kind of pops up like a weasel.
Yeah.
Right. And you're just like, what the fuck? So I gave that a 3.8 knitting needles out of 5. And then my rewatchability, I had never seen this movie before. I feel like it was just a little bit past my time. And I'd grown up knowing everything about it that I didn't really think about watching it. So I gave it just a solid 2.0 knitting needles out of 5.
That's understandable.
Yeah.
Okay, so for scariness, I'm going to say, okay, if you sit in a dark room with a large television and turn the volume on said television up very loud.
Yeah.
This movie will scare you, but it's mostly because those jump scares are so reliant on loud noise happening.
Unsurprising you, yeah. Right?
That being said, if I were to transport myself back to 1978 and watch this in a movie theater, it would have scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it, I'll say like a 3.5 out of 5. And
which your murder weapon?
Mine's going to be a coat hanger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you'd choose that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I'm such a fan of
That's not the reason why. It's because you liked it as a improvisation weapon.
Yeah.
What do they call that? What do they call that? It's in Dungeons and Dragons.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Fuck. What's it called? God damn it.
Fuck.
Improvised weapon.
Improvised
weapon. It's just called an improvised weapon.
Yeah. When Carlock goes into a frenzy or a rage, she can throw shit.
Yeah. Just anything. Just anything is available. A dwarf.
Yeah.
A rock.
Yeah. A dwarf. A rock. A candelabra.
Yeah. A chair. A couple of chairs.
Yeah.
And a dwarf.
So yeah, I'd give it like a 3.25.
Just to split the difference.
For scariness. Yeah. For quality, I'm actually going to rate it fairly high for quality. I'm going to say, like, knowing budget and knowing that, like, also the majority of this movie relied on just really good camera technique.
Right.
I'm going to say it's like a 4 out of 5.
Okay.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
For rewatchability, it is God's intended length for a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I feel like once you've watched it, once you've learned it's such a huge part of horror culture that, like, you know everything about it. You don't have to watch it 1,000 times.
It's a one, like, and done.
Yeah. It's a one and done sort of thing. So for rewatchability, I'm going to give it like a 2.
It's one you should definitely watch if you just want to, like, laugh your ass off for 90 minutes.
Or if you're one of those people that you feel like you're diving into the genre and you really need to know, like, where did we come from? Where did we go?
Yes.
Like, I think I think you should watch it just as, like, required reading for the genre.
I think so too. No, I think it's a pillar. It's a keystone that you've got to, you, like, not to be a hardcore OG horror fan, but like you were saying, to know where you came from.
Yeah.
And to kind of understand then, as you watch horror now, or you watch horror as the decades have passed, you start to see little nods and little homages, and you start to see, like, where John Carpenter kind of came from, because this really was, like, his first big, like, debut film and big horror film.
And it's one of the very first and one of the hallmarks of the slasher movie genre.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's why when I was saying earlier that, like, I was watching this and I grew up on Scream,
yeah,
which is making fun of all of these movies that came out right in the 70s and 80s.
I will die on the hill that Scream is mostly a comedy.
It's almost purely a comedy. It just has good, like, it also has good slasher kills in it, but it is fucking funny.
Yeah.
Just purely for, like, Matthew Lillard and that character that plays Randy. And quite honestly, Rose McGowan.
Yeah.
Ugh. Iconic.
Yeah. It's weird seeing her without a machine gun leg.
Yeah, no shit. Yeah. I mean, that's where I first saw her.
Yeah, so that being said, rating aside, if I were to just give this movie a rating that's not based off of our criteria, because of its weight for the genre, I would give it a 4.5 or 5 out of 5.
Oh, absolutely.
Just because, like, this movie was monumental, and it still to this day is monumental. Don't worry about watching any of the sequels, anything like that. Like,
just
none of them hold up to it. But I do think it's an important movie.
You know, it's a 5 out of 5, like, in terms of just, like, an average, hey, if you haven't seen this before, you should definitely be encouraged to do so, simply because this is a movie that transcends generations.
Yeah.
My generation, our generation, and even generations after us can hear the Halloween theme song and know exactly what it is, and they've never seen it before.
Yep.
Just culturally, like, they just automatically know what it is. And if that movie holds that much significant weight, like, it's a movie you definitely need to see.
Also, another honorable mention, Rob Zombie did a remake of this movie that, if I were to recommend anything in the Halloween franchise aside from the original to watch, his is actually killer.
That was the first one that I had seen. I had seen the remake.
Yeah.
And it's very different from this.
It is.
Like, it is very, it's a bit more origin story, or a little bit, like, the details are very, very different, but some of the threads are the same.
Yeah. But yeah. Rob Zombie knows how to do the hell out of a horror movie.
That's true. We need to do some Rob Zombie films because I know I haven't seen enough of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Like House of a Thousand Corpses is nuts.
And I've heard like Devil's Rejects is really good and Three from Hell. And I haven't done, I haven't watched a lot of those because even though I really like things like Planet Terror and a lot of those kind of, it's not that they're B horror movies, but just.
They're just a little bit on the campier side.
Yeah. Well, and even more so like, what's the word that I'm looking for? Like I like the Wrong Turn movies, but sometimes they go into territory that I'm not super comfortable with. Oh, and I kind of feel that the same way about Rob Zombie sometimes, where I'm like, am I going to get like a fear response to this? Am I really going to like enjoy it? Or is it just going to kind of gross me out?
Yeah. Right? He does get a little icky.
Yeah. Which is totally fine. Like I would love to do it now for the podcast. Like I think that would be a good time to be like, okay, now I have an excuse to watch these movies where in the past I've passed them. I've just been like, not my cup of tea.
Yeah. One of those things that like, if you don't have a reason to, then like, why put yourself through that?
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. But definitely worth going through.
Oh, we'll get through all of those. But I agree with you. The I think it was 2018 was that Halloween Rob Zombie remake. But
something
I don't fucking remember.
Yeah.
I think our last ticket on the docket right now, last little thing, is just what we're doing when we're not on the pod. Like, what are you watching? What are you playing? What are you?
Yeah.
Creating.
This is kind of a follow up from last week's episode, which will be next week's episode for you guys.
Shit.
But I finished Exquisite Corpse.
Ooh.
And it's gross.
Ugh.
It's gross.
Would you recommend it?
No.
Okay.
No, I loved it.
Good take.
But don't recommend it.
Okay.
If you're an extreme horror fan, then I would say go for it.
Then give it a shot.
Yeah, but if you're not comfortable with necrophilia or very vivid descriptions of dismemberment and disemboweling and that sort of stuff, then
you're like, just pass this one. Just move on over it.
Yeah, then maybe just like go read Pet Sematary or something instead. No shade. It's just less intense. And then game-wise, still just playing Baldur's Gate. But what I was saying earlier that we were going to get to that later is just went through the first like romance scene with Gale.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, how was that? I don't think I've ever romanced Gale.
Oh, yeah. It was great. And yeah, whenever I have free time, it's been
Baldur's Gate.
It's been Baldur's Gate.
Hey, there's no shade in that.
Yeah.
I love me some Baldur's Gate.
Yeah. Book-wise, I did start another one. A book called Desert Solitaire by Edward Abbey. And it's supposed to be a very poetic. I would say it's supposed to be like a very poetic take on like a natural science book.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Supposed to be very, very informative of his experience while living in the backcountry of Arches National Park. But it's supposed to be written in a very beautiful way.
Hmm.
Yeah. So supposed to read like fiction while being nonfiction.
Interesting. Okay. I'm excited to hear your review of it.
Yeah. And it definitely, I read a lot of natural science things, but if it's something that has more of a narrative to it and not just as informative, then I tend to lean more into extreme horror.
Mm-hmm.
So this is different.
This is outside of your wheelhouse for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I also recently started a new book. After I had finished Horns, I didn't really know what else I wanted to read or listen to. So I got a couple of recommendations for spooky season from a couple of my friends, and I downloaded both of them on Libby. And they were Briar Dark and A Dowry of Blood.
I've heard of A Dowry of Blood.
I just started it. I decided to listen to that one first because it's only 5 hours long.
Oh, that's
not bad.
So
it's like super quick. So yeah. I'm about halfway through it right now. And it's just about a young girl who her family is brutally murdered and she's kind of like beaten and left for dead. And she's rescued by this vampire that changes her and makes her his like undying bride. But then she kind of, as she lives with him throughout the century, she starts to realize that like, he's kind of a piece of shit. And so she's trying to like navigate her love for him and her servitude to him, but also like trying to figure out how she can live with some of the decisions that he makes.
Ooh, okay.
And kind of how she can navigate like her own existence now that she's living this like new life, this new renewed life.
The ethics of vampirism.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things where like, you know, you're dying, you're literally on your deathbed, and you know, you're like, I really would like this to not be this way. And you have somebody who's like, okay, well, I can offer you an exchange if you want to, you know, be immortal and, you know, no longer have any of these like human comforts, but you can have all of these other comforts, right? And so it's like it's a deal with the devil, you know, where you're like, it's enticing, but is it really worth it?
It's like vampirism is like not chill, but also neither is dying.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and especially in such a like grotesque, like gruesome was the word that I was looking for, way. Like I know that happened in the Twilight films too, where like the dad of the movie only turned people that like he found that literally had no other option. It was like, okay, either you die from whatever horrible ailment you're suffering from, or I give you an opportunity. Like I give you a way out.
Yeah. The epic Mormon novel series of Twilight.
Yeah, I don't think we're ever going to cover those.
Nope.
Although they are pretty good. They're pretty good cringe-core, if we're being honest.
Yeah, I have not watched all the way through any of them.
Oh, really?
Or read any of them.
Oh.
And I refuse to do
it. Well, I'm the teenage girl of the group then, because I've read all of them. I read all of them in high school, and I too watch the movies pretty often. Like if there's because I love background music, like I am almost always have a headphone in my ear and I'm listening to something, and lots of times it's things that I've seen several times before just to have it as background noise. And every time the Twilight series goes up on YouTube movies, you can almost guarantee I'm fucking listening to it.
There is a really good song, I think it's in the first one.
There's only one that comes to mind for me.
It's Eyes on Fire. But I can't remember the name of the
band. You'd have to look it up. I think I know which one you're talking about.
I want to say Eyes on Fire. It's by Blue something. Yeah, Blue Foundation.
Yeah. A Dowry Blood was by S.T. Gibson. And then S.A. Harrion did Briar Dark, which I heard Briar Dark is really good and is done by a Beaverton author.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so somebody just like lives just down the road from us.
There is also, this one's coming up on my list. I'll probably have read it by the next time we record because we're going to take Halloween off.
Yeah.
Oh, it's called The Fallen Boys by Aaron Dries.
Ooh.
Yeah, that one's supposed to be, I'm trying to read my way through. I saw something called The Disturbing Books Iceberg. And it breaks it down by like, I think, 6 or 7 levels. And I'm trying to just read my way
through it. Get through it. Yeah. Super cool. Yeah. The only other thing that I'm doing besides like, you know, every once in a while I play a video game or two is I just started a new leatherworking course.
Oh, fun.
That I got for my birthday. So yeah, I'm working through the modules for that.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about taking a pottery course.
Oh, I fucking love pottery. Like making your, like on a wheel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is so much fun. I took a pottery class in community college and I really liked it. And it was like our final project was we had to make like 8 to 10 pieces and we had to have like a little gallery for them.
Oh, I want to do it so bad.
And I still have most of the things that I made too.
It's like one of those random things that my gay audacity tells me that I would just be really good at for no reason.
And everybody needs to have like a good hobby that you can like do with your hands.
Yeah.
Like I saw something one day and I'm not going to remember it now, but it was just talking about you should have 5 hobbies, you know, hobbies that challenge your brain, things that challenge, like that make you physically active. You should have things that like, you know, connect you with other people. Like, you know, you should have well-rounded like hobbies.
That's, yeah. I think that's the thing that's missing for me right now is just something to do with my hands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the closest I get is foraging, and foraging season's pretty short.
Yeah, so. Foraging or probably like cooking. Like there are plenty of things that you do with your hands because like everybody uses their hands all the time.
Yeah.
But I think there is something that is to be said about just having something, even if you're not good at it. This is the thing that I've been really struggling with whenever I start a new craft is that like gap between skilled and unskilled, right? Where you like, I don't want to make anything because I know it's going to be crappy, right? And it's just like, just fucking create it. That's the whole process.
Yeah.
Is to be bad at it at first. So
I do run into the wall a lot of like starting something and being like, oh, if I'm not immediately great at this, then I'm not
going to even put an effort.
I'm just not even going to try.
I'm the same. It's so dumb. Like, because I know it's so counterintuitive. Like, you need to be able to practice something over and over again. But I'm the exact same way where I'm like, if I know I'm going to have to put in all of this effort, or if I don't have the perfect idea to start with, I don't even want to start it.
And especially when you're on like the young side of old, like we are, where it's like you have to do things a few times because we don't just pick up on things immediately. Like, we would have if we started pottery when we were children.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and it's just a matter of like making time too. You have to carve out time in order to do things that are fun. And I think it's sometimes like it feels like a chore. You're like, I'm like carving out time to do a hobby, but then it almost feels like the hobby is work.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, okay, well now I need to go to work and do this.
Yeah. Yeah. You get home and like, it's so funny. It's like you get home at the end of the day after working a long shift or whatever. And I want to like sit down and just like veg out, get high and play my video games. And I'm like, fuck, who's going to make dinner? Fuck, who's going to feed the dog? Right.
Yep.
And then you're like, oh, instead of getting high and playing video games, I could work on this leather project or even like start a leather project. Right. And it's just like, oh, that sounds like work.
I'm going to have to put in effort.
So anyways, how about this? Let's work on it before the end of the year. Let's try and like, I don't know where you're going to look for pottery courses, but.
There's a place in Sherwood, the Sherwood like Art Center or something like that does it. So
check it out. Yeah. It is fun. We did take a pottery throwing class. It was just like 1 4-hour little date night that we did. And we just like, you could throw like either a bowl or a cup, I think. And they taught you how to do either. And then what you could do is you couldn't glaze it. They just like clear glazed it for you and you could pick it up the next week. And we just never picked it up because we were like, the experience was fun. That's what we did it for.
That's what you wanted.
Yeah.
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 But doing this like painting, this like pottery studio next door was also really fun.
I'm so cute.
I love Mo Momo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of, Nick actually just texted me. Sunday is the part of Dia de los Muertos where the animals visit.
Oh.
Yeah. So we've been talking about putting something together so that his dog that we had to put down last year will come visit.
That's so cute.
For Sunday. So,
do like a little shrine.
Yeah. So he just texted him. It was like, Mochi visits on Sunday.
Oh. Dude, that would be so cute. I've honestly been thinking about making this little space back here kind of like an altar.
Yeah.
Like kind of cleaning it off. I was thinking about putting like a little vase for like flowers so I could get like fresh cut flowers and put them there. And yeah, that would be kind of cute to have like a little altar space, put like her favorite treats, like her toy on it. Because there are several people who come in, you know, who I'm like, hey, if your dog has passed away or your cat or whoever, like give me a picture of them and I'll put it in the, you know, frame. I think it'd be kind of cute to eventually have the whole wall kind of covered.
Yeah. Oh, sweet baby.
Yes. Ugh. Well, is there anything else that we should chat about before we call it for the evening?
I think we're good.
I think we've exhausted all of our Halloween content.
Stay tuned because we're going to have a little field trip coming up here soon. And we're going to do something a little local, a little spooky.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be a good time.
It's going to be fucking awesome.
But otherwise, bye.
Have a great night.
It's always spooky.
It's okay. It's just the tamale lady.
But she wants tamales.
Yeah, she said, I want tamales.
She's like, do you have sweet corn tamales?
Hey,